WNYC Studios is supported by the Brennan Center for Justice, presenting The Failed Experiment of Mass Incarceration. This virtual event on Wednesday, April 17th at 3 p.m. will feature criminal justice advocates and contributors to the new book, Excessive Punishment: How the Justice System Creates Mass Incarceration. They will discuss why the American approach to criminal justice is so punitive and how reforms would prioritize human dignity and restoration over retribution. Find more information and register for this event at brennancenter.org/events.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and this hour on our program, WNYC's Elsa Chang on the federal court order yesterday, decision really, that they will hear a class action suit accusing the Stop and Frisk program in New York City of violating people's constitutional rights. And some of the language that was used by the judge was really, really interesting. So we'll get to that. Also this hour, public art. What's the installation of your dreams? And where in the city would you put it? Get ready to call in with those at 11:30. And we'll get to Elsa in just a minute. I do want to take 1 minute to kick off this hour with a reminder about our spring membership drive. This is day three. We hope everyone will do your part to support the station. And we do have a contest deadline if you're just tuning in. That is the end of this hour, 12 noon. Anybody who pledges by noon will automatically be entered to win an iPad and a MacBook Pro, courtesy of TechServe. You get both if you win. So if you are going to make a pledge anyway this year, why not do it right now while you get automatically entered into the contest for the iPad and MacBook Pro through the very generous courtesy of TechServe. Pledge online at WNYC.org or call 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692. Thank you so much for helping us pay the bills. And thanks to TechSurf for donating the prizes, and hopefully one of you listening right now will win. 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692, or pledge online at WNYC.org. Noon deadline for the contest. And thanks to all of you for supporting WNYC. Well, it was a potentially big blow in court yesterday to the NYPD's stop and frisk policy, along with some harsh criticism of the policy from the judge. WNYC criminal justice reporter Elsa Chang is here to explain. Hi, Elsa.
Hi there.
So federal court judge Shira Scheindlin allowed a class action suit to go forward against the policy on behalf of, I guess, hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers who would claim that they were racially profiled rather than being stopped for any suspicion about them personally. Why is this ruling significant?
It's significant for a lot of reasons. When this lawsuit got class certification yesterday, that meant it turned from a lawsuit about four black men — these were the four named plaintiffs who were alleging they were illegally stopped — to a lawsuit about the NYPD's entire stop and frisk policy. So now that entire program is before the court, and it will be up to the city and the department to defend the entire stop and frisk policy. It's really important to remember that when these plaintiffs, these four named plaintiffs, were certified as class representatives, basically that's the court's way of saying what happened to you is typical of all the purported members of the class. And right now, that class includes every single person who's been stopped without reasonable suspicion of criminal activity since January of 2005 up to present and going on in the future. So that potentially includes hundreds of thousands of people. And that means whatever remedy is imposed at the end of this lawsuit, if there is a remedy, will be imposed citywide. If this had just been a lawsuit brought on behalf of four plaintiffs, whatever remedy was imposed in that case would have been tailored to whatever particular precincts were alleged in the complaint of those four plaintiffs.
And I'll be curious to hear you describe in a minute what those remedies might be. Is it money to hundreds of thousands of people who were stopped and frisked? Is it a change in the policy? But in the decision, the judge accused the city of, quote, deeply troubling apathy towards New Yorkers' most fundamental constitutional rights, unquote. Which constitutional rights was she referring to?
Well, our freedom to be our right to be free of unlawful searches and seizures. And she was specifically responding to an argument the city made near the end of its papers against class certification. And that argument went like this. Even if the plaintiffs could prove that the NYPD has conducted thousands of unlawful stops, this court cannot prevent, and no injunction can prevent, unlawful stops from happening in the future ever again. In fact, violations of the Fourth Amendment are just a cost of fighting crime. And if this court were to wade into this issue and try to impose an injunction, that would amount to a judicial intrusion. If there was a way to prevent unlawful stops, the city says, the legislators would have come up with a way to prevent unlawful stops. So leave it to the legislators. So the court is basically saying, are you kidding me? First of all, improper stops are never acceptable under the Fourth Amendment. And it's a totally, quote, cavalier attitude towards the constitutional freedoms of New Yorkers for you to say that there could be widespread unlawful stops as a result of crime fighting in New York City.
And how ironic, if I'm understanding you correctly, that the police department would be arguing that there's no way to enforce the Constitution.
It is ironic. I mean, I know they're not saying, like, you know, we're just going to go willy-nilly and just blow up people's constitutional rights. What they're saying is, once in a while, Fourth Amendment rights may be violated, but that's just a necessary cost of aggressive crime fighting.
And I guess part of the question becomes, what does once in a while mean? Because out of the 800,000 people who the city is on pace to stop and frisk this year, only 10% of those are actually arrested or issued summonses. What does that tell us about the criteria for a stop, and does that figure into the arguments in this case?
Well, according to opponents against stop and frisk, they're saying, look, that means the vast majority of people who are stopped by police are completely innocent. So there can't be that much suspicion. Well, let me just back up here. In order to stop someone legally in New York State, there has to be reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. That means, theoretically, every person that is stopped on the street has to actually be suspected of having committed a crime or is about to commit a crime. Now, the irony is, as crime rates have fallen in the city, stop and frisks have risen. So it doesn't make sense at that level. If crime rate has fallen, how could the number of criminally suspicious people be rising? That's an argument that a lot of opponents put forth.
Although I think the mayor and the police commissioner make the opposite argument, which is stop and frisk is so effective at reducing crime that the more people we stop and frisk under whatever the criteria are, the more potential crime we are preventing, and that's their, I think, their most heartfelt policy reason for continuing.
That's right. That's a huge argument that they make. In fact, they apply it to guns. For instance, in both 2010 and 2011, around 800 guns were retrieved after more than 600,000 stop and frisks. Last year, there were 685,000 stop and frisks and a little over 800 guns retrieved. Now, according to data from the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, more than 4,500 guns were turned in by the NYPD for tracing. That means for every 5 guns that were retrieved through mechanisms that were not about stop and frisk, only 1 gun was retrieved through stop and frisk. So opponents against stop and frisk are saying, look, there's way more efficient ways to get illegal guns off the street. But Mayor Bloomberg and the department are sort of spinning the argument around. They're saying, no. It is misguided to assess the success of stop and frisk based on gun retrieval rates. In fact, the low number of guns retrieved reflects that stop and frisk is working, because that means young men and possibly women are not bringing their illegal guns out onto the street because they're too afraid to get stopped and frisked. Unfortunately, it's very hard to measure how many people in New York City are not bringing their guns out because they're afraid to get stopped and frisked.
Although I guess because this is a constitutional argument about violation of the Fourth Amendment, search and seizure rights, the effectiveness of the policy is probably not admissible as a point of argument.
You would think so. I mean, there are criminal justice experts who say, look, all of life is trade-offs. You know, when we're monitoring Muslims, there are, you know, certain issues at stake, but there's also national or constitutional liberty issues at stake. There's also national security at stake. That is the perennial debate. I would think that there are a lot of people out there who agree that no matter what, if a civil right is being violated, it does not matter if that civil rights violation is contributing to the fighting of crime. It is a civil rights violation, and therefore It should not be done, period.
A case like that could make it to the Supreme Court on those grounds. Here's a clip of Mayor Bloomberg reacting to this judge's decision yesterday in terms of public opinion.
If you went out and surveyed the public, you would find overwhelming support for what we're doing. And a handful of people who have a right to express themselves feel differently.
And there was a poll recently that found stop and frisk had majority support. But I guess this gets back to the constitutional question. Does it matter, should it matter to a judge whether 55%, even 85% of the people want to violate other citizens' constitutional rights? It's irrelevant as a legal argument.
That's right. I mean, keep in mind the judge, Judge Shira Shinlin in this case, is not the ultimate fact finder. If this case proceeds to trial, a jury of our peers will be judging whether there truly was a constitutional violation in all these thousands of stops that we're talking about. But also keep in mind how well informed are people about stop and frisk? I mean, in terms of its effectiveness in fighting crime rates, the police have over and over again cited it as one of the main reasons violent crime has gone down in New York City. But no academic study has conclusively proven that stop and frisk directly leads to a reduction in violent crime. There is not a single study out there that proves that, and the NYPD has not yet produced one. Violent crime has actually fallen in major cities across the country, especially since the 1990s, even in cities that do not employ stop and frisk at the levels that the NYPD does. So it's an open debate whether stop and frisk is, quote unquote, working, but the police say it is.
What happens if the plaintiffs win?
If the plaintiffs win, basically the plaintiffs' lawyers right now at the Center for Constitutional Rights, Darius Charney, who's leading the litigation, told me they're still outlining what they will ask for in terms of injunctive relief. They are not asking for money. They're asking for policy changes. So what do they want? They want an outside court monitor to monitor the police's use of stop and frisk tactics, to monitor the individual reports that are filled out every time an officer stops someone on the street. This would be the first time, as far as I know, that an actual outside court monitor would be actively supervising officers and supervisors of officers. They want systematic retraining on stop and frisk, and they want basically an end to what they call quotas. Now, the department has been calling using the term performance goals. Opponents against the NYPD has been using the term quotas, but basically they want an end to the pressure on patrol officers to increase arrests or keep them high, to keep summonses high, and to keep stops high. Because even Shira Shinlin noted this in her opinion yesterday, that type of top-down pressure to keep numbers up is increasing the number of stops every year and therefore leading to potentially thousands of unlawful stops in New York City.
When's the trial?
That's a good question. There's going to be months and months of more pretrial motions and probably, most likely much more discovery. So I don't know when the trial would be. I do want to make note of one thing. Today, Commissioner Kelly is before the city council on budget issues, and he is rolling out a plan of how they're going to address stop and frisk concerns right now. It's important. I mean, I reported this last week based on some of my sources within the NYPD. Right now, the police basically, Commissioner Kelly is ordering all precinct commanders to closely review every single stop and frisk report that's filled out as a result of the stops that are done in their precincts to make sure that they comport with the law and that they reflect reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. He's republished an order that he actually disseminated in 2002 against racial profiling. Opponents of stop and frisk have been saying that they've been racial profiling in the years since, so that order didn't do any good. Commissioner Kelly is republishing that order, and he's also instituting retraining of officers. He's talking, you know, today in City Council, he talked about 5 new training videos that will be shown to all officers, expanded outreach to youth by creating a new pilot program to teach business-related skills to youth. He's also talking about actually putting in more hours of training, revamping the entire training to new rookie officers, about 1,500 of them, from Operation Impact on how to conduct a lawful stop. So there is awareness. I mean, Kelly has said that stop and frisk are a sensitive issue and are working to deteriorate some of the police-community relations in the city. And he is addressing that, at least today at the city council meeting.
It also means public pressure is having an effect on the way they run the program. WNYC criminal justice reporter and recovering lawyer Elsa Chang, who found obviously something great to do with her law degree, which is to translate complicated federal court cases like this into plain English for the rest of us. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I hope it was plain English.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come.